Recording is on.
So now everything that you said will be recorded and available forever. So announcements, again, and reminders. Chris, please. Did you queued yourself? Did you want to share anything? Maybe not at this stage then. Anyone else? All right, great. So let's move to introduction and reintroductions. Anyone new to this call that would like to quickly just say hello, please jump on or we will call on you.
Hey guys, how's it going? I'm Evan McMullen here from the Disco team. I'm super excited to join the conversation. I'm here joined with my my colleague and co-founder, Johnny Howell. We've been floating around the edge of the W3C ecosystem for many years, but super excited to be here live and live in color to join you all today.
Lovely. Thanks, Evan, for breaking the ice and looking forward to hear what you guys are up to. Anyone else to say hello?
Yeah. Evan just mentioned me, but I'm Johnny, work with Evan on Disco, product lead and co-founder over there, and great to be here.
Thank you, Johnny. All right. Welcome. All right. If you just don't feel like opening up the mic now, there is going to be an opportunity throughout the call to jump in. Wait, please. I see someone coming off on video. There you go. Jan, we cannot hear you though. Maybe Jitsi playing audio tricks on you. Yeah, maybe you want to try to work on that. You know, happy to just please cue yourself up, you know, at any point. And well, we'd love to hear from you. And welcome. Anyways, yeah. Chris, you put something in the chat regarding you're looking for a community manager. You want to open up your mic now and maybe ask and share that directly? All right. No, apparently so. But please, folks, look in the chat. Diff is looking for a community manager. That's a great opportunity. Okay. All right, we're through that. Love to jump into the conversation today. We are going to talk about, you know, Web3 and verifiable credentials and particularly through, I guess, the minds, you know, eyes and mouths of, you know, Johnny and Evan. They have been really, weaving a strong narrative around verifiable credentials and decentralized identifiers in a way that connects a lot of use cases. You know, I think when we reflect on adoption and the work that we do here, you know, adoption being the ultimate goal, we probably need strategies or just way of articulating the value. And I think they're up to something. And I don't want to take away any more time from them because I think this is we want to hear from them and then also have a conversation together. So, Evan, I will just pass the floor to you and take it away.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for having us today and really excited to work with all of you to make verifiable credentials the awesome standard in practice that they are specs in the hypothetical. So I know obviously, you know, many of you have been working on this for many years. Johnny and I have worked on a variety of implementations for verifiable credentials from enterprise to education, which is what we're thinking about together here today. So I'll invite Johnny in a minute to tell us a little bit more about Disco as it will be introduced to the world in early April. But we see a really exciting opportunity for verifiable credentials to provide the firepower from which Web3 and the crypto ecosystem, can, you know, can get its power. We're seeing right now that there is a surge of desire to work in the crypto and Web3 ecosystem, and that because there's not a lot of formal education available around, around that content, we see many different, you know, diverse credentialing, issuers, many organizations that are providing some of this guidance, but very few ways for a user, an individual, to accrue that expertise, proofs of their learning and expertise, in a rapid manner that allows them to share that expertise and those proofs with a potential employer, a decentralized autonomous organization that they want to be part of, or some other, you know, entity or group creating content around this ecosystem. And so, so we think that there is a really exciting chance for us to insert verifiable credentials into this process, and to enable the Web3 education ecosystem, the crypto education ecosystem, to issue these credentials at a high velocity and to enable users to present them with, similar speed and validity. And so, you know, as we talk about, like, what are the killer use cases? What are the use cases with high velocity of demand for credential issuance and high velocity of demand for credential verification? We see this sort of as a perfect storm. And so to talk a little bit more about how Disco as a product offering and, you know, set of APIs and SDKs will begin to enable this universe, I'll hand it over to Johnny to share a little bit more about our product vision, overall, and then more specifically, how we're thinking about initial use cases.
Yeah. So thanks, Evan. So at Disco, what we're trying to do in the, early part of April is launch something that can facilitate the user experience, for the end user, for interacting with verifiable credentials and DIDs. I know, I don't know everybody here, but I'm sure many of you have worked on, maybe the standards and the protocols. And, you know, that's something that Evan and I used to work on. I used to work on a team called Uport back in the day. Where we were working on some of these things before these standards arose. And, one of the things that we see now is that there's been, like, you know, maturation at the protocol and the Varamo team and Nota Bene and, you know, many others, that are working it, you know, building the, building out these standards and figuring out a lot of the technical complexity under the hood. Evan and I's goal here is to bring a user experience layer to this that allows people who, you know, as we see the abundance of issuers who are capable of signing verifiable credentials and issuing them to users, we want to build a thing, a product that allows a user to take custody of those VCs in a use case agnostic form. So, many of the POCs we've worked on and seen in the past usually result in some proprietary app, that, works with the issuer. So the issuer has its own app for the user to store their VCs in. And we want to build something that is more under the user's control. So that's what Disco is. Disco allows a user to take custody of VCs issued from any number of issuers. Hopefully we want to expand to allowing lots of different type of VCs. I know that there's, you know, JWT based ones, JSON LD ones. And we want to support all of those. We want to support a user taking credentials, from, you know, our friends at Trinzic or in the Evernym ecosystem, or, we have friends at, you know, Ontology and Orange and, then of course in the Ethereum ecosystem like Spruce and all of those things. So we're built, to start on Ceramic, as the storage layer, but we want to integrate ID hubs and Spruce's Kepler and any of the others. It'd be great to hear if anybody else is working on, VC credential storage for end users. We would love to integrate with you as well. But in April, we're planning to launch a tool that allows a user to receive these credentials in an inbox. So you might use an issuing library like Spruce's DidKit or something like that, or Varamo or something like that, to issue credentials, and to your user, they can take custody of them using a web app, which is Disco. And we do this by leveraging the current Web3 infrastructure, which is Ethereum wallets. That works well with Ceramic. So you just simply can target a user's DID by targeting their Ethereum address using EtherDID, and related also is 3ID method from Ceramic that we also support. And your user can take, they don't need a wallet, you know, a special wallet. They do need a Web3 wallet to start. So something like a MetaMask or Rainbow or anything that's supported by Wallet Connect. And, the user can receive a credential to their inbox. It's encrypted by default. They decrypt it to add it to their public profile. And then as they go on their journey around Web3, they connect their wallets to all the subsequent apps, even Web2 apps. And those apps can call our API and read what credentials are issued to them by who. A lot of this is backed up by using verifiable credentials to a link account. So we don't want, you know, we're trying as best as possible to encourage people to link human readable identifiers like Twitter accounts or domains to the keys, the public identifiers that they're going to sign credentials with. You know, this is either using the dot well known DID configuration document method, or just simply placing a verifiable credential proof at the DNS registrar, you know, as a text record attached to that. This allows, you know, when you present a user presents a credential to some other third party, for that third party to know that it was signed by some human readable entity, like, you know, university.edu or something like that. We're also are excited to introduce the ability for end users to sign credentials and issue them to other end users using EIP 712 signed typed data method in the Ethereum world. So users will be able to issue credentials. So I've worked in the space for, you know, many years, and I haven't signed very many credentials on my own as a non-developer and a designer. I don't really use the command line that much and things like that. And there's only been a few products that I've used that allow me to sign with some keys in my control as of right now. I know that there are probably some that I don't know about, but we are really trying to make that accessible to the early adopters of these technologies, which we see as the Web3 community. And they also have a lot of blockers right now. One of their core tenets of many of these use cases is being decentralized. And part of that is the user data being decentralized. And so we think it's a, you know, a very ripe and fertile ground for us to start getting very quick feedback loops on the usage of VCs. So, there's lots of things I'm, you know, maybe we could talk about. One of the conversations that we've been talking about recently is, you know, how do we allow, like a DAO who does, wants to do education, how do we allow them to sign, you know, credentials of proof of knowledge and things like that. And that comes with some technical complexities. But yeah, that's, what we plan to launch in April. There's a long-term vision, that I'm sure you're all familiar with in terms of, you know, the SSI space, selective disclosure and verifiable presentation support, being able to store credentials locally on device, you know, many of these things, and happy to dig into any of that, but I'll kick it back to you, Evan.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Johnny. So, you know, for today, would love to, you know, invite any questions that anybody has. If your organizations, are interested in being able to deploy this technology, we would love to chat with you. But further beyond that, we're very interested in ensuring that, the right standards make it into the hands of these credential issuers. So very excited to, you know, continue to define that path for our partners, in the ecosystem at the app layer that are in a position to be issuing credentials, so that we can ensure compliance with the, thoughtful decision making, of this particular body. I know that there are a number of sort of ad hoc standards entities working to adopt shared standards so that we can express the full portability of these primitives. And so, as we, you know, start to spin up, collaborations using our products once they're live, in a few short weeks, we would love to be able to contribute to the community, started by those on this call, and, provide some real life use cases, where we've got end users, hanging out, and, you know, ready to engage these technologies. So I know we've been chatting for quite a long time. So happy to, you know, open for any questions, and just generally invite conversation on the floor.
Thank you, Evan. Thank you, Johnny. Great. And thank you for joining us today. I wanted to break the ice with the question that is around use cases. So part of the work that we're doing right now is also collecting different use cases around VCs in education. And specifically, what use cases do you see connected to Web3 and education surfacing? Can you speak a bit to that?
Most certainly. And I know Johnny thinks about this a lot, so I'll kick it over to him next. But in the Web3 ecosystem, there is not a standard set of formal reputation attesters. There is not, you know, there are not a lot of institutions that confer things like degrees or standardized achievements in the same way that we might, you know, enjoy transcripts and diplomas from more formalized institutions. So there is a vacuum in terms of the ways that people can prove their aptitude with the subject matter, but there is also a remarkable demand for individuals who can prove such aptitude, because there are hundreds, probably at this point, thousands of companies seeking to hire folks who have expertise on Web3 subject matter, and who also have smart contracts deployed that are ready to be able to receive information such as verifiable credentials to be able to execute logic within their own apps and organizations. So unlike, you know, higher education and things like diplomas that are pretty low velocity, pretty hard to earn, you know, 10 of those in a year, let's say, for, as an individual, there's an opportunity to both, generate, you know, earn, a variety of different proofs of aptitude. And there's a lot of demand to be able to read all of those as well. And so in the absence of formal credentialing in the Web3 space, we see an opportunity for emergent credentialing, you know, between the Web3 education providers and the individuals seeking employment in this space, as well as the many different employers who are currently struggling to find people that have the basic knowledge required to participate in their organizations. And so we're seeing, you know, as with much of the traditional tech ecosystem in Web3, you know, something like 40 to 60% of new hires are social connections of the existing team because there is this massive discoverability problem. So because, you know, atomic identity and atomic data allows us to solve that discoverability problem, we see this as a great opportunity for DIDs and VCs to be the transport layer for such qualifying information. Any further thoughts there on the unique opportunity in the Web3 ecosystem right now?
Yeah, no, I think you basically covered it. I mean, maybe I'm just reiterate a couple things. There is just, yeah, we've seen the giant influx of, I mean, there's the massive migration, happening around especially Web2 devs and other, you know, tech knowledge workers trying to break into the Web3 space. There is a huge, demand. I mean, our team is hiring. We want to hire these people. All of our friends in the Web3 kind of ecosystem who are, you know, obviously flush with a lot of VC cash that are trying to expand are trying to hire like crazy. And one of the big things is they want to know, does this person have a knowledge of the space and the nuances of working in Web3? Do you know anything about NFTs and DAOs, et cetera, et cetera? DAOs have, you know, had, you know, are on the rise, you know, like many other crypto-based narratives of the past. We'll see how it evolves in the future. But right now, DAOs are looking for people that have experience in Web3, know how to mint NFTs, can make generative art, can do all of these things. And there aren't any formal educational institutions that teach this. So there are no formal verifiable credentials that can prove this. So that gap is being filled by bespoke, you know, institutions that offer courses. I mean, it looks like, you know, the type of the Web3 version of things like Coursera and Udemy, where people just generate content and learning things. Our good friend Austin Griffith, he has speed run Ethereum, which is a little program to try and get Web2 developers up to speed on Web3. And there are no formal certifications or anything like that. There's a couple of entities that some of y'all might be familiar with, like C4, our former, you know, there's our friends at Consensus Academy and some attempts here to formalize what an education means in terms of these topics. But, it's all very nascent, and, we're trying to figure out how to allow, you know, YouTube content creators that teach Solidity and, you know, Austin Griffith and these other things like the Learn Web3 DAO, how they can issue credentials efficiently, and according to a standard in which all of these entities interoperate and are all issuing at least from the same set of schemas, for different topics, to allow us to ease the transition of people into the Web3 space, give them an obvious path and steps to take, which is, hey, I'm a Web2 person. I want to move into Web3. What things do I need to learn? And how can I get proofs of that so I can easily disclose those credentials in some hiring process? And so that's kind of where, you know, we see Disco as being a vehicle through which a user can receive those credentials and then disclose them in the hiring process. But right now, we, on our business development side of things, we're reaching out to many of these organizations and having conversations with them. And we want to be able to confidently steer them in the right direction around how to construct the credentials that would end up being issued. So that's kind of where we are.
Thank you very much. And I think a positive outcome of this chat would be to add one or many of these emerging use cases to the list that we're tracking. So great. Carrie had a question. Carrie, over to you. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks for being here today. This is super interesting. And Johnny, you said something about structure, and that's kind of a good segue to sort of my questions here. Many of us here on this call, and maybe not everyone, quite a few are familiar with open badges, which have been around for quite a long time. So these, the concept of open recognition and being able to recognize outside of formalized education, it resonates with us really strongly, right? And so what we've been trying to do is align standards like open badges and comprehensive learning record, which is similar, but say a multiple credential, versus like open badge is say a single achievement, CLR is multiple, and there are other education achievements too. And there's also networks defining skill definitions and all sorts of structure that is coming into play that probably would be coming in even if we didn't have Web3. But right now what we're trying to do is make all of this fit together into verifiable credentials. And so what we have a lot in our space is a lot of wallets who are going to be very specific to education that are going to understand how to display this content. And you mentioned MetaMask and other web wallets. And I was wondering, how you think you're going to approach that and, taking the structure and getting it more globally understood in the way that you're talking about.
Yeah, so I guess one of our goals and where we see the opportunity is to build a system that allows a user to interact with credentials without really needing to adopt any net new infrastructure, right? So back in the day when I worked on Uport, we had to have a special Uport wallet to do a lot of things. And this was a big blocker to adoption, at least back then. And I think it would still be now. People didn't want to have their MetaMask, for instance, at least in the Web3 Ethereum world, didn't want to have to have a MetaMask app and then also jump over to the Uport app to disclose their credentials. So we're trying to make this integrate with the current tools that we see Web3 users having already. And that's our first goal is EVM compatible wallets, which also include chains outside of the Ethereum world. So Avalanche, a couple others, for instance. I know that there's been some talk, and I'm actually not currently up to date with it all about the progress of trying to make open badges compatible with the VC standards. It would be great if a Ethereum wallet, or some Ethereum keys, according to the way those keys are constructed, can sign valid open badges / verifiable credentials and issue them to users. I think we're going to see, and to allow, Ethereum users to, disclose and do verifiable presentations on those things using those keys that they already have. So I kind of forgot your question as I was rambling there. But I think that yes, we are totally down with open badges, and it would be great if they are turned into VCs. The other piece I wanted to talk about, which is, I think for us, we are at the intersection of a lot of different use cases. So not just specifically education. So there's, you know, lots of stuff happening in the entertainment and content creator space in the Web3 world. So, you know, music and other things, NFT artists and all of this stuff. They want to also take advantage of verifiable credentials. So we're trying to build a interface that for taking custody and interacting with this type of data that is pretty use case agnostic. Now, one of the two big verticals are education for us, future of work and all of those things, and also kind of entertainment media creator stuff, you know, fan relationships, proof of fandom, you know, these types of things that people are trying to currently build decentralized communities around. So that's why we're trying to build something that is, you know, that we don't want to be too opinionated on our interface and in our app about it being for education explicitly. So we need to be kind of vanilla in that regard. So that's at least our approach. So the things, whatever comes out of here, out of the, you know, the educational credentials working group, we would want it to not be specific, too specific, at least in its underlying structure. And I don't think y'all are probably going to do that, but, to educational use cases, we would want, you know, any educational credential to be able to sit just alongside in the exact same user interaction patterns, that exact same UX to take custody of credentials for other things as well.
Thanks. Karen, unless you want to your response, Nate is on the queue.
Yeah, that's fine. You can go. Thank you.
We were talking to Carrie there, who is one of the people deeply involved in the Open Badges compatibility effort, getting that VC standard. As far as timeline there, we expect the standard to be pretty much finalized sometime this year, and within a few weeks, we'll be able to start doing prototype examples of signed credentials, which brings me to my question, which is if we want to say that one of the important next steps here is to identify whether we can sign one of these things with an Ethereum key, do you have some good examples to point us to as to what the proof method is that we should use there, or some example signed JSON so that we can show how that would work with one of the two educational use cases within Open Badges or anything else we talk about here in BCEDU, those two use cases being a skill assertion, recipient has this skill, or a defined achievement assertion. A recipient has met the criteria of a particular degree or other achievement.
Yeah, so I think we'll try and find some links. We're really building on some of our team has kind of extended. I don't know if it's fully compliant at this stage, so maybe we're a little bit ahead of the standards just out of necessity for going to market on some things and building out some things. And so we were building on it with a team called Veramo with their underlying libraries, and we're able to extend that to use the EIP-712 signed type data standard in Ethereum. This allows you to sign structured human readable data, which can be formatted as a valid VC and signed with those Ethereum keys. And then, you know, and I think it works fine for our use case. It is not universally compatible yet with, I mean, not every type of key. It's a specific signature method that allows for this to work with Ethereum keys, but, you know, non-EVM chains is still to be, you know, figured out. Spruce's DidKit, I believe their libraries also allow for this, and we might adopt that as well. They were built and originally did this using Tezos keys, which I think are EVM compatible keys. I can't be sure. I would have to, you know, look back at the libraries, but yeah, so right now, let me see. I'll pause or ask a follow-up if you have something, but I'm going to ping my team and see if I can find out right now so I can drop you a link on the libraries that we're using for that MetaMask-based signing.
Great. Thanks so much. And as a quick follow-up, maybe for Evan, what would the user experience be like that you imagine for the signing of a particular credential, and where do you see the sort of biggest friction points in terms of building something sensible for onboarding a large number of people to be able to participate in an open educational-based recognition ecosystem?
Great question. I'll actually throw that back to Johnny in a quick second, but the sort of brief takeaway is that user experience will be defining in how successful everything that occurs after that onboarding is. And so at Disco, we are very focused on enabling the sort of smoothest, most unintrusive process, I guess you might say. You know, our expectations are set by Tim Cook, and we forget those when we come to Web3 or decentralized experiences. And so with that in mind, I'll hand it over to Johnny to talk a little bit more about, you know, what that process of onboarding looks like and, you know, what it will feel like, at least to start obtaining these credentials.
Yeah. So in the past, one of the, you know, back in our experience in other SSI teams, this looks like, and I think it still is in a lot of cases, it says, hey, I've done something in your context. You want to send me a credential. There's a lot of times this has been download this app to receive your credential. That's been a big blocker. And we've seen it, you know, firsthand. There's some other workarounds, which is, hey, we're going to store the credential for you until you get a wallet and then you can take custody of it. Or it uses, you know, there's been experiments with like Chappie and stuff, which is like local storage in the browser and, you know, these not great UX, but these like, browser dialogues that allow you to interact and see that you've received a credential, et cetera. We're trying a different approach, which is we think that while somebody might just show up to disco.xyz and hit connect wallet and log in with or authenticate with MetaMask or something like that and have an inbox and start there, we think the flow that we're optimizing for is we have a lot of partners that want to issue credentials. And though the first time UX for somebody interacting with a credential will probably happen outside of Disco. It'll be, we have friends at Rabbit Hole, for instance, and they kind of do gamified onboarding into Web3. They ask you to complete some typical Web3 tasks, like, you know, do a token swap or, you know, stake some coins in a contract or mint an NFT or something like that. All of this is a little cost prohibitive for new users right now, but hopefully that those costs come down or they deploy a lot of these kind of modules onto layer two things, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, putting that aside, when the user needs to receive this credential, we want the user experience to be one in which, hey, you have a verifiable credential. You can get it at disco.xyz, and it'll be sitting there in purgatory, essentially, associated with that user storage and only their keys, because obviously Rabbit Hole has their public identifier and you can encrypt against that. And they send it to us, to our API. We deposit that into some Ceramic storage, but that might change as we onboard new storage providers. One that we're super excited about is Privy, which has much more, you know, better privacy preserving, attributes. And the user shows up, they can follow a link from Rabbit Hole, and now they don't have to download an app, but we know that they already have the infrastructure they need, which is MetaMask or something like that. And they simply need to connect to Disco and they will have a notification there that says, hey, you have a credential waiting for you. Would you like to add it to your profile? And then now we have onboarded a single user with their first verifiable credential into the space. Now, there's also an alternate path where you do come to Disco first and you set up your profile there, and we are going to issue some credentials to try and kind of gamify onboarding. And we also plan to support kind of like a marketplace of like, hey, I'm here. I've got some Ethereum keys. I can take custody of credentials. I can issue credentials. What should I do? Right. And we want to be able to populate that marketplace, with both issuers and relying parties, and make that easy for a user to navigate. It's very similar to the types of things you see when a layer two blockchain launches in the Ethereum world. The very first thing they launch with is a bridge for bridging your assets. And then also they launch with a marketplace of what dApps exist and are deployed on this blockchain that you can go use right now if you've bridged your assets. And so I think we're going to need something very similar there for onboarding users into the verifiable credential space. Rather than like these disparate unconnected POCs, we need a place, we need a marketplace of like, I can do more than just the one thing I showed up for. Where do I do the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh thing? So that's how we're approaching it right now.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Let's see if anyone else has a question. I have a few, but I don't want to take up all this, you know, our time. All right, Taylor, take it away. Thanks.
Yeah, hey, thanks. Thanks, Simone. And good to hear from you, Evan and Johnny. As always, I think this is broader, but I'm curious and giving credit where credit is due. I think you guys have some of the most sort of accessible narratives and language around just making this real and you know, giving folks an on-ramp to actually think about moving this direction. So curious just to, yeah, get thoughts on like, I mean, I think there's still a huge just knowledge gap. Obviously, the minute we step outside of a community like this, just discussing this stuff gets really tricky. So, and part of our role at Learning Economy is to hopefully, you know, make some of this a little more accessible. So yeah, would love to just kind of hear or riff on ideas around, you know, different analogies and ways in which you discuss this that seems to be bridging gaps, you know, knowledge gaps. I think that's almost as important as getting some of the tech right is to make sure we have, you know, easy versions of this that folks can sink their teeth into. So yeah, Evan, I know in particular, you've just got a magic touch with language to make some of this, seem very approachable for folks. So yeah, any good analogies, any ways you've, you know, what's resonated with other folks that are not necessarily, you know, in this world or, you know, Web3 natives.
Oh, Taylor, you're the best. Always so wonderful to be able to jam with you. And I think, you know, you are spot on. Like in the early 1960s, Marshall McLuhan taught us that the medium is the message. And our takeaway from 2022 is that the meme is the message. We need analogies, metaphors, tangible examples that people can reach for to help them understand the relationship between these new primitives and the role that they can play in their actual lives outside the protocol. And so, one thing, you know, I'm sure maybe Johnny, your experience has been different, but one thing that's really surprising to me is that folks who are not Web3 native, understand the concept of verifiable credentials very swiftly. It hits right away. If your framework is of assumption does not start at a public blockchain. Now, for those who do come from the Web3 ecosystem, I found that relating verifiable credentials to NFTs, so contrasting them from another known primitive, has been really successful. So, you know, NFTs are public, on-chain, immutable, intended to be transferable. Verifiable credentials are private, off-chain, revocable or can be set to expire and subject to, you know, sharing in accordance with the consent and participation of the subject. And so looking at verifiable credentials as sort of an off-chain encrypted payload that can be presented and curated in the same way as an NFT, but is specifically for more non-transferable traits, that hits pretty well. In perhaps less technical terms, I have started to refer to the combination of decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials as a data backpack. Your data backpack for the metaverse, allowing you to be in ownership and control of what comes with you, allowing you to, you know, choose from your backpack and disclose the information that you want to share. And that when you leave, like items that you'd carry around in your backpack, when you leave, those items come with you, those assets come with you. In addition to that, I don't know how many like hardcore nerds we have on this call, although I feel like I've probably got a few of you here. You might be familiar with live action role playing or LARPing. And so this sort of gamified experience, in real life, kind of playing out battles, with foam swords, is also very similar to the experience that we have in digital video games, where, you know, as you're playing through a video game, you might have a satchel, a loot bag, a loot crate, somewhere that you can start to obtain, the valuable assets that you encounter as you play the game, as you go along. And so at Disco, we're saying that, you know, life is a giant LARP, a giant live action role play, but without a loot bag, without somewhere for you to carry around the awesome data that you're creating, you create it and then you just have to leave it in the context where it was produced, you know, subjecting that data to centralized storage or worse, publication in a public ledger. So in the same way that we can enjoy the portability of our on-chain tokens, assets, and cryptocurrencies, we should be able to enjoy similar portability for the rest of our data. And that's what a data backpack, that's what a DID and VC combo allows us to enjoy as users. Johnny, I know that you're also very, very deep in the memes. Anything that has hit, that's not hitting, different ways that we've started to think about this?
Yeah. So, we have a form on our website right now that has a field in it. You use it to sign up for, you know, more information on Disco. It's, you know, we have a pretty basic site right now until we get closer to our launch in April. But in that form, there's a field that says, share your metaverse dream, right? And we've had 1,000 responses just in the past month so far. And I've monitored them all. I've read them all. And, the data backpack comes up a lot. Like, that is the skeuomorphic thing that people seem, at least in the language that we floated, has that is seeming to stick. I totally agree with Evan though that, you know, and something that I've tried myself is, of course, since we are embedded in like the very deep Web3 community and Ethereum people and are at those conferences, and those are typically the people we are talking to, NFTs is the obvious reference point. Off-chain NFTs, like that, for people that understand NFTs, you use off-chain NFT and they maybe have a couple questions, but at least they have, you know, it gets a little closer. The thing that I've always talked about with other people that seems to resonate in some user interviews, if they're familiar with crypto, again, this kind of is a pretext for it, which, is lots of people are coming to understand the way that in which Bitcoin or Ethereum allow you to do digitally what you can do kind of physically, which is the transfer of, you know, cash, you know, hand to hand cash, right? Like Ethereum and Bitcoin are, you know, trying to make that possible, in the digital space. We have the same type of thing whenever we use our license at, like, let's say a bar, right? They scan your license, a physical object, or you drop it in one of those little boxes that scan it, or they use their light on it or whatever. And none of these things require, the relying party or the bar in this instance or the bouncer to call the Department of State or the DMV or anything like that to know whether or not this credential is real. And so in the same way that we've taken the physical interaction of cash and made it digital without needing a middle person, we want to do the same thing for all the other things that might be in your wallet, outside of your financial assets. So that's been something that when people call me and ask me to, you know, explain Disco to them, like my friends, you know, back home that, you know, have heard about it, that's the my go-to thing. And that seems to really close the gap. And they're like, oh, you know, that makes a lot of sense. I get how, they already are kind of familiar with how the promise of the crypto asset stuff. And we're simply saying this is an analog, but for all of the other things that would be in your wallet. So that's been relatively useful.
Thank you, Johnny. Thank you, Evan. We have a question from Sharon. So what about people that are not digital native? What's their onboarding experience?
Great question. So of course, you know, we can't boil the ocean and serve all people, at all times just from day zero. So to begin, as we work out the kinks of, you know, deploying this ecosystem of capability, our first set of users is, existing Web3 native wallet holders. So folks who are already managing key pairs, already comfortable with an Ethereum compatible wallet. From there, we'll be scaling up to incorporate other Web3 based chain ecosystems like Bitcoin and Solana. And once we feel assured in the user experience that we are delivering, being, you know, on par with the kinds of app and dApp experiences that we would expect with excellence, then we will begin exploring things like custodial options that will allow you to sign in with a more basic identifier like a username and password. However, we think that the merits of you know, having public signing keys that that are, you know, on chain and able to execute more than just signing off chain data, we think putting those in the hands of users is critically important. So our hope is that the user experience and onboarding journey for Web3 will mature as does DISCO's, and that, you know, we can meet somewhere in the middle, certainly at a better user flow than we have today. However, in thinking about those custodial experiences, those experiences that are relevant for users who may not be managing existing keys pair. We're actually working with a variety of luxury Web2 retail vendors, retail brands that do not have Web3 native users, but are excited to capture proofs of purchase, receipts as verifiable credentials. So through working through that use case, I think we'll get to a much clearer definition of what an outstanding user flow can look like. But because we're not starting with a custodial option, that will definitely be something we explore a little bit later. Johnny is our sort of user experience and design wizard. Any further thoughts on how in the future we'll be exploring custodial options?
Yeah, so, I mean, your point is well taken. Onboarding web native people, especially non-even Web3 people, is quite the hurdle, one that we've engaged with a lot. You know, we've worked on, you know, in other SSI teams, you know, worked on, you know, refugee identity and citizen identity and a lot of these things. And key management is a huge issue. However, I guess from our road, in terms of adoption, we think we can get our first, I don't know, million users from people that already have, you know, that are already custodying their own keys, right? And so that's why we think right now is a time that we can actually get a critical mass, build a business, without having to engage with that problem yet. And we think, you know, when we worked on those problems, the feedback cycles and a lot of that stuff in the infrastructure that was available was just not, the feedback cycles weren't fast enough. The maturation of the UX of many of these wallets that we were asking these users to download weren't great. So we're taking a more stepwise approach where we're trying to, get credentials into the hands of people that have shown that they are early adopters first, and iterate there. It's kind of based on, at least personally for me, it's very much based on, Clayton Christensen's disruption theory, for back in the 90s, where, you know, the assertion in that book is that one of the best ways to facilitate the emergence of a disruptive technology is to look at small niche audiences first, and iterate very, very quickly, there. And so that's where we see the most fertile ground for iteration without these other blockers. But to the point of how do we finally cross that chasm? Yeah, I think that there are some interesting work again by our friends at Spruce with session keys, which are kind of like ephemeral signing keys that can be DIDs, that allow you to log in maybe via a regular OAuth method and generate keys that are for that session to be able to interact with credentials and do certain things. And then they are gone, but there is a proof that remains, to show that any credential signed in the past by some keys that are no longer existent were still valid at the time, could be a bridge into making the experience feel, like you're not doing full on private key management. Back in the day at UPort, we worked on some of the early research around social recovery, and even went as far as to do off-chain social recovery using Shamir. And, you know, rather than like a smart contract based on-chain thing. And, you know, this was an attempt that I'd really love to see Disco or any other teams. I bring it up in the, you know, the diff calls as well. Like, what is the current state of the art in social recovery? Like, has anybody really fully tried to deploy this? Argent does it, but they do it with the smart contract, which was our early design at Uport. There's some problems with privacy and collusion and everything there. So I'd really love to see us do more experiments with that key recovery. If we have identifiers that are linked to human readable, other human readable identifiers, like what we're trying to do at Disco, in which a public key can be verifiably linked to a Twitter account and a domain and all of these things. I think we can actually create a good UX around social or distributed recovery. And that might help ease the burden of actually getting somebody from zero to self-sovereign. And then finally, you know, there's DIDs and VCs offer the ability, especially just, I guess just DIDs on their own offer the ability for us to rotate the controlling keys of an identifier. And so we could see that Disco custodying, a DID for the user. And then when they are ready to offboard out of Disco's management, though they can still use our interface for interacting with their data. But they can rotate to say they install MetaMask and then they can make that transfer happen, you know, revoking, or essentially rotating out the Disco managed keys to some keys that they manage when they are ready. And so that is a pattern that is likely going to be on our radar for, you know, testing and implementation near the end of this year.
All right. Awesome. Thanks again, Johnny and Evan. We are coming up at the end of, you know, our session together. And I did put myself in the queue because I have a question that I wanted to keep for last, but just possibly more as a teaser for something that we want to address more in the future. And this is the difference between NFTs and verifiable credentials. So could you, in just a rapid fire, maybe give us, you know, what are the three main differences between the two in like 3 minutes? And then the call for everyone is that we want to collect more info about this conversation. We have already started, and so we may have another similar session like this where we just focus on this. Evan and Johnny, just to close out, thank you.
For sure, yeah. One of my favorite things is a rapid-fire comparison between DIDs and – or between VCs and NFTs. So NFTs, as we know, are globally available, public, immutable, transferable assets. When they're not transferable, they diminish the autonomy of their users by enabling for a token ID to be immutably mapped to their public address without their consent and participation. So verifiable credentials, as we know, are kind of the opposite side of that coin. They are private by default. They can be revoked or be set to expire, though they can contain any data payload like an NFT's URI can point to anything. They are non-transferable once they are issued. And so like a diploma, once they're written about you, they will always be written about you. Even though the JSON file can itself be transferred, the content cannot be migrated to describe a different party. They are revocable or can be set to expire and can be disclosed in whatever granularity the subject prefers, whether in plain text or, you know, with something like predicate disclosure that allows you to interrogate a specific field without revealing that plain text. I think those are kind of the high points that I like to hit. In that comparison, I always like to remind folks that DID signing keys are also can also be rotated, and so we have just greater flexibility there than we do for your standard public identifier. Johnny, as we're signing off, any other comparisons that we'd like to draw here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a bit of at least a narrative arms race happening between NFTs and VCs. So, you know, first thing we point out, NFTs transferable. Well, then NFT advocates come back with non-transferable NFTs. Then we say, okay, well, then they're, you know, the data is public and you're putting PII on chain. Well, then they say, we'll have the NFT point to some off-chain resource and that will be in a zero knowledge, you know, like using a ZK scheme and it'll be, you know, private. Then we say, okay, well, you can't rotate away from those. Like if you need to root, you know, use new keys because, you know, maybe your wallet you think it might have been compromised. well, then there will be implemented a standard that allows the transfer of that NFT only if some other address can prove that there's a mutual ownership between the first address and the next address. So there's a bit of this, like, I think, and then, you know, then there's the conversations around forward encryption guarantees into the future. And then you get into a conversation about quantum resistant, you know, encryption and these things. So I think that that's like where we are. I think at a meta level, for us, we just think that the NFT approach feels like a hack. It feels like, we are taking something that was built for some other purpose and trying to make it fit into the shape we want it to, where we have something that is in purpose built to solve the problem that, you know, other teams are trying to solve with NFTs. Now, that doesn't mean VCs are going to, doesn't obviously mean that VCs are going to win. Of course, Evan and I think they will, and we're going to, you know, help make, we do believe fundamentally that it should be VCs versus, or we, you know, teams should be using VCs rather than NFTs. But, yeah, there is a bit of a, you know, if you start talking to somebody who really is working on the NFT side of this, there are a lot of theoretical answers, for solving these problems. And that's the current state of the conversation as I've had it so far.
Awesome. I think there's probably, you know, one thing that we can learn from NFTs as in, you know, the fast kind of adoption or hype that has created, maybe leading to adoption, you know, so maybe it's a question around how they connect to your identity and how expressive you could be with that. So this is, again, I kept this for last because I know we could go down this rabbit hole for a long time. We started to collect some feedbacks in conversations, even within the credentials community group. And that could be the base of something that maybe we can share with the public that helps to elevate or inform the level of the conversation. So, you know, happy if you want to contribute too. And this clearly is for everyone, as well here.
Sure. One last comment I'll make, then I know we're over time, is that I think what NFTs have done, that we have maybe not focused too much on, but what we want to focus on at Disco is the skeuomorphic nature of NFTs. They feel like ownable objects. You can see them on screen. You can show them to other people. They sit in a box that feels tangible, right? And one of the things, I think that is why it's been very hard for people to conceptualize VCs when they are simply JSON blobs stored in your app's storage, or something like that. And, I know that open badges and things like this have tried to create these like objects that you can see on screen that people can feel something about. And I think that that's just what NFTs have done really well. They can display them in a gallery online as things that they own, right? And this is the cognitive bridge I think we have to like really lean into with VCs if we're going to compete against that NFT narrative.
Lovely. I like how we ended on that note. I think we've seen kind of hints of the genetic code of open badges coming back into this conversation, whether it's the backpack, whether it's, you know, the skeuomorphic nature of these kind of credentials. And it's a good thing that part of the work that we're doing here is really also informing the next version of open badges, which is going to be a verifiable credentials. And that's really like a clear outcome that we have here. Well, thanks for sharing your story. Glad to be on this journey together. Again, good luck with Disco. I guess see you on the dance floor. And looking forward to have you back here again. Tell us some updates or maybe dive into the NFT versus verifiable credentials question. Okay. All right. Awesome. I'm sorry. I guess we took a few minutes to go over time. We were supposed to briefly review the use cases. Carrie has dropped the link in the chat, but it's the same link. We'll pick that up next week. And lovely. Awesome. Thanks again, Evan. Thanks again, Johnny. Thank you, everyone. See you next week.
Thanks, all. And Simone, don't forget to turn off the recording.